Am I speaking here? Oh, Vishnu is speaking through the Yama. And they say, what is the process of punishing others? Who are the actual candidates for punishment? Are all the parties engaged in furtive activities punishable, or only some of them? Responsibly. Shri Chaitanya Mahavishnam Shapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupakaramaya Radhati Sapanantika Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Ranga Gnana Shri Vasudi Guru Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, the Vishnudutas were smiling, because they knew very well the principle of religion. And the Yamadutas, they thought they knew very well the principle of religion. So they were smiling. Just like Krishna was smiling when he began to instruct Arjuna in the middle of the battlefield. Because he knew the answer, therefore he wasn't, you can say, really so inquisitive. And he wasn't just trying to embarrass his disciple, but he knew that Arjuna was going to give a wrong answer. So he was smiling, saying, okay, you fool, now what are you going to answer? How are you going to respond to this? So in the same way, the Vishnu Duties are understanding thoroughly the principle of religion, and therefore their question, well, you know, what gives you right to punish somebody? What is the qualification? So then the Yamadutas will explain that the Dharma is coming from God. Those who don't follow the Dharma, they can be punished. And those who do follow, we don't punish. Something like that. That's going to be the answer. But of course, then the Vishnu Duties will bring in the fact about the glories of the Holy Name and how the Holy Name is able to deliver one if chanted, you can say, in a surrendered way. So that was Arjuna's qualification. He was surrendered in the sense that he didn't have any other hope. He was just calling for his son in a helpless, a hopeless condition. But that should be what we aspire to. We're chanting every day this mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. But we have to improve the quality of our chant. No one is coming to this kind of society as a perfectly pure chanter. There are three stages of chanting. One is this perfectly pure stage, the other is the offensive chanting, and the other, which we're in, is the removing the offenses. So we should be trying to improve the quality of our chanting. It means that we're removing the offenses from our chanting. And of course, there we know the offenses. We recite them every day, especially to maintain material attachments, even after understanding the instructions on this matter. And the other thing is bringing the same point, that Dharma, so what do we understand as Dharma, or principles of religion? We understand there are four principles of religion: cleanliness, austerity, truthfulness, and mercy. So we have to be cultivating that, like austerity. Now someone is proud, they can't take austerity. Why? Because if the basic, you can say, foundation of practicing austerity is to think that you want to improve. But if you're already self-satisfied, if you're already complacent, you're feeling that, oh, you're in a nice position, you have so many advantages. Like people think, I'm an American, I'm young, I'm wealthy, I'm beautiful. So many advantages are there. I'm educated. These are considered as prime kind of material opulences. Then why should I take this trouble? Why? But rather I can play. I can go to the ski resort. I can, have illicit sex. I can go to the nightclub. Why should I take the trouble when I'm already well situated? That may be for those beggars who need a crutch. That's what they say. You know, religion is for those who need a crutch, who can't make it on their own. If I'm doing fine on my own, what do I need a crutch for? So therefore, they won't take any austerity. So we have to, you know, research into our own heart. How much are we thinking like that? How much are we ready, really, to sacrifice for the pleasure of the Lord? Up to, you know, like there's that They work out, right? Jane Fonda, she said, you have to work out until it hurts. If it hurts, then you know you're making some progress. So this isn't just on the material side. We want to speak of spiritual. We have to do some austerity until it becomes a little inconvenient. That's the meaning of austerity. We're sacrificing that inconvenience for a higher purpose. It's actually a little inconvenient. Getting up every morning, having a champions round, knowing this is sex, especially, you know, that's inconvenient for everybody who has a body. Once a devotee said to Brahma, well, I'm troubled with sex. The Brahma said, you, the whole world is troubled with sex, from Brahma down to the ant. Anybody who has a body. So we say, no, this is sex. That's a trouble. It has to be a trouble. So why should we take this trouble? That is the real question. So the answer is, because we're in an awkward position, because we're in a suffering condition, we have to remind ourselves about that. This is why we have this class every day. To remind us of the actual philosophy. Otherwise, we can be carried away by the illusion. It's so easy to become deluded in this world. Everybody is deluded. Thinking of this body, they can enjoy it. They'll be happy here. Therefore, we have to sit together and discuss Vishyanticha, Ramanticha. We become enlightened. We find that there's a better thing than this false pride, than this prestige, which you can say poisons our attempt to perform spiritual austerity. Then when we become enlightened by this kind of talk, then it's easy to perform austerity. It's not so difficult. When we actually see what is the nature of his body, who am I, then the form of the woman won't be so attractive. Really, what is it? Raised breast, underneath which there's capillaries and milk glands and blood vessels. And what's so attractive? Of course, there is some attraction. There is a little, because it's there in the original. So let us talk about Radha and Krishna. Then we can lose our attraction. And of course, talking about Radha and Krishna means talking from Srila Bhagavatam. We don't have to jump to the 10th canto. We can talk right here about Ajaviya and the principles of religion. And the Yamadutas, the Vishnu Dutas. This will all direct us to Radha and Krishna. Ultimately, of course, we want to enter into the affairs of the Rasa dance. No more. We want to enter into the affairs of the Rasa dance, but that is the most intimate. Krishna is having an intimate relationship with Radharani, and we want to put our nose there? What is our qualification? First, we have to go through the wholesome of Radharani to become free from any tinge of iniquity before we can deserve or before we can desire. First of all, we have to desire. I mean, first of all, we have to deserve before we can desire. And we say, oh yes, I want to go into the gopi club. But what is your qualification? You're still thinking of having sex with a mundane woman. Then how can you be allowed? Can you just imagine? I mean, an ordinary man, would he allow you to come in his room when he's having sex with him? But sometimes the manjaris, they're there. Assisting Radha and Krishna, even at that time. So just imagine how pure they have to be in order to enter into that, in order to even be in the vicinity. So we can't imitate, but we can follow the footsteps. And this is the beginning, following the footsteps, thank you. Means taking the order of the acharya. Prabhupada has given us an order. How to conduct our lives, no necessary, no qualification, no gaming, no meaning. Eat only Krishna Prasad, see the deity in the temple, chant Hare Krishna, so we rather, read Srimad Bhagavatam, hear the class. These are given to us by the one who's at that level. And he's clearly able to see, because he's very mercifully turned his attention to us fallen, conditioned souls. I heard a nice story how Prabhupada related to his god brothers. I just heard this recently from one of Prabhupada's from the disciple of one of Prabhupada's godbrothers, that when Prabhupada first came back from America, he was telling how the devotee, people were coming to him. And he gave the example of worms coming out of stool. Usually when a worm comes out of stool, then he goes right back into the stool. That's his home. So Prabhupada said, I was chanting in the Thompson Square Park, and the worms started coming out of the stool. And he said, by some miracle, they didn't go back into the stool. Then he didn't stay with me. But that was our position. We were eating a stool and thinking, oh, how relishable. Pranath talks about chewing the chew. And the If you're a devotee, Srila Prabhupada agreed to give us a little of his attention, a little of his love, a little of his time. And so, we're able to have a chance to come out of this school. Therefore, we should be grateful. This is the point. We should be very grateful that this personality is taking so much trouble to come here, to canvass amongst the most fallen people of the Kali Yuga in the most hellish city like New York, in the Lower East Side. I was there at that time. I came to Prabhupada at 22nd Avenue. I was originally coming from the suburbs, you know. I wouldn't even go into that area. I don't know where. The Prabhupada was living there. And even worse, he was living in the Bowery. Why was he taking such an austere trouble? Because he knew he had the medicine that could save. So he saved us. Then how can we think, okay, thank you, Prabhupada. Now I'm going to go about my life. No, we have to repay him. So this is our humble attempt to repay him. Means that we, first of all, we follow him. And then we try to get others to follow. Not a very difficult thing to understand. The track is ready, the train is running on two tracks. Prachar and achar means practice and preaching. So, we practice every morning and we go for preaching. What is difficult? This should be the mood of every devotee. We should feel so grateful to Prabhupada because he preached. If he didn't preach, what would our position be? Nobody would have come. We would have never understood this philosophy. Therefore, we are dead. So, let us take a little austerity. That's another reason to take austerity. If one is actually thinking like that, then one has to be humble. See, again, the pride, which won't allow us to take austerity. But if one is understanding that I'm fallen only by the mercy of my Guru Maharaj and I've been picked up out of the school, then it's easy. Then one is in a humble position, just by being in touch with this reality. In other words, being humble is not an artificial position. Being proud is an artificial position. What do we have to be proud of? But being humble is natural, the normal position of the living entity. We're very small. 1/10,000 tip of the hair. What is our arrogance that we're thinking that we're something special, that we're so qualified? No, we're very poor. Therefore, taking austerity will be welcome. And it'll become joyfully performed. In the beginning, maybe it'll be trouble. Just like I had a friend who was Guru headmaster for some time. Or ashram, not the headmaster. God, Sushi, Radha, Padana, Gonika, and Sitaram, Ashram. And he was teaching the boys. You know, he was the ashram teacher. So he wasn't teaching, but he was living with them and training them, you know, how to put on Tina off and so. So he would get them up in the morning. And then when the boys would first come, new boys, it was very hard for them. Because in Vrindavan, there's no hot water. Of course, the water's not too cold. But still, it's austerity. You have to get up at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning. And all these young 6, 7, 8 year old, 10 year old boys have to go in and take a shower, come out, put on tea lap. In the winter especially, it's colder. So he said, at this point, we're telling him, he said, yeah, I saw that when they first came, for the first 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, it was so hard for them. But once they got into it, once they got into the routine, living in the guru, being enlivened by the positive things, so much kirtan, so much bhajan, the association of the other boys, then very quickly, they would be happy to do it. They would run into the shower, and it'd be all, you know, just like these people go in the, what do they call it, polar bear club. They go to the freezing lake, and they break the ice, and they go into the water in the middle of winter. And they come out, and they're feeling good. So how do they do that? Because they got themselves in a state of, you can say, frenzy almost. But in this fishing garden, it's not frenzy, but there is a higher taste. We can actually take satisfaction from our spirit. It's not just a drudgery, oh, every day I have to do it. No, it becomes joyful. If we're doing it properly, then Krishna will reciprocate with us. And there won't be a burden. Prabhupada was talking about us taking care of the deities, especially after we left. He said, I don't want you to become, to make this a burden. And you think, oh, now Swamiji has left, we have these deities we have to take care of every day. Every day we have to get up, we have to dress them, we have to bathe them. Such a big trouble is there. No. If we do it with devotion, then it will be joyfully performed. You think Janani Vasa and then went to Vajrayi, Pankajanvi, in Vrindavan, in Mayapur, for so many years, they've been doing that Vajrayi work. For, like, I was there at one point, for like 10 years, Janani Vasa hadn't even left the property. And he's a British by birth. He's living it, doing it for so many years, he's been doing 30 years, he's been Vajrayi here, and you think he doesn't get any satisfaction? He's not getting paid. He's living here as a brahmachari. So how's it going? Because it's joyfully performed. So we're not getting that faith because we're not doing it properly. We're not chanting Hare Krishna properly. We don't have the right attitude. We're coming to take something from Krishna. If we come to take something from Krishna, then of course we may get that, but we won't get the higher taste. We won't get the love of God for which we're always anxious, which Lord Chaitanya advises us. Isn't it? To get a taste of this nectar for which we are always anxious. This is really what we're anxious for. Not sense gratification, which has a beginning and an end, but to come in contact with our soul, which is always joyful. Okay, any questions? Yes, sir.
So much you mentioned in the beginning, punishing, that is, at least, discriminating who should be punished and who should not be punished. I'm just wondering what happens to the someone who looks like a devotee, performing devotional service, but on the other hand is very proud, and is arrogant to others, calling them fools and things like that, bullying other people. So what happens to them at the end of the life?
Well, the Krishna is in our heart, right? So he's keeping accounts. Nobody gets away with anything, especially if you're offending devotees. And Krishna takes that very seriously. He doesn't appreciate that. So, according to our position, what we deserve, what we desire, we'll be placed into another room. And obviously, such a person is not going to go into the spiritual world because they still have these kind of propensities. Unless by some good fortune, just like Ajani, they're able to really, really, from the core of their heart, surrender at the moment of death. But generally, that's the exception, not the rule, because generally at the moment of death, we're in anxiety about ourselves. But this is not the mood of the devotee. The devotee's not in anxiety about himself. Like Prahlad Maharaj says, on my own account, I don't have any anxiety, but when I think of the suffering of others, then I feel anxiety. So what is a bully or whatever, arrogant, because he's preoccupied with himself. So, generally, if one is living like that, his life, then at the time of death, he'll be very much preoccupied with himself. Like Prabhupada tells the story of one of the acquaintances that he had, who was pleading with the doctor, "No, doctor, I'm not finished. I have 4 more years, please. Give me 4 more years, and then I'll finish my plans." The Prabhupada was saying, demoniac, mentality. So, my point is that we'll get what we deserve. Just like when Junior Haridas committed suicide, what you done is smile. First of all, advanced devotee doesn't think he's advanced. Advanced devotee thinks he's a servant. He's a humble servant. Like Prabhupada wrote on his letter when he came to America, an insignificant servant, devotee was called. He was really feeling like that. Krishna Das Raj Kaviraj thinks, "I'm lower than the worm in a stool. So if anybody takes my name, they'll go to hell." They're actually thinking like that. So no devotee thinks I'm so advanced. He's thinking someone else is advanced. Like Yudhisthira Maharaj was thinking, when he heard about Kalana, he said, "Wow, he's an advanced devotee." He was appreciating those who are really advanced. He doesn't think that he's advanced. If you think he's advanced, that's the opposite of the rule of the Vaishnava. The Vaishnava is, it's like I was with Prabhupada once and I was, telling him how advanced, and he said, "No, I'm simply a humble servant." He was really thinking like that, that he's a humble servant. Because that's what he's meditating on. He's meditating on the lotus feet of his guru.
So what is the advice that you could give to people like that who are so arrogant?
They should have a guru. Baba was once asked that. By devotee. Well, we read in the Shikshastakam, there's no mention about accepting a guru there. And Baba said, "You need not read Trinada Peace to Nityaya. They want you to be more humble than the greater past, more powerful than you." Prabhupada said, without having a guru, one cannot be humble like that. But one has a guru, the business of the guru is to train him up. He sees that his disciple is arrogant, Then he takes the stick. This is his duty, his bounden duty. And unless the disciple is qualified, he won't accept it. In other words, there has to be some hope. Otherwise, you become guilty of the United States, preaching the holy name of the faithless. So if someone is so hopeless, then we don't spend much time with the people. You know, if there's somebody who says he's so arrogant, and then we go to the innocent people and spend our time with them, or to the devotees. Because arrogance is just the opposite of the devotee. The devotee means humble. Father, what's going on that person? There was some fighting in the temple, and he was very disturbed. He said, this is not a robot Vaishnava. Father said, Vaishnava means humble. So, if someone is arrogant, then he said, well, why should we associate with the people who are not Vaishnava? Even though they have dress like a Vaishnava, Bhaktivinoda warns us. They call each other. In the Kali Yuga, they may be dressed like a Vaishnava, but they're really servants of Kali. But we have to discriminate. If someone is so arrogant that we can't help them, and they're not humble enough to accept the Guru to help them, then they don't resist it. Don't spend your time in front of them. Oh, no, 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 no,